Mastermind Agent is proud to present Success Calls. Top real estate agents from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the calls at www.mastermindagent.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Cerrone with Mastermind Agent. This month's top agent is Laura Duggan with West Austin Properties in Austin, Texas. She closed 39 transactions with a total sales volume of $19 million in her best year. Her average sales price was $484,000, of which 36% were buyers and 64% were sellers. She operates a team with three members, one agent partner, one chief operating officer, and one team leader. Laura Duggan is the team leader of West Austin Properties. She's been an agent for 34 years and sold homes in five decades. She works the Metro Austin market. This year, her average price is $794,000. In this call, Laura talks about increasing your average sales price into the top 5% in your market, earning larger professional service fees, becoming a luxury home agent, how to find luxury home buyers and sellers, what to say at open houses to connect with visitors and get contact information, networking with other high-end luxury service providers, producing webinars to generate leads, how to market a luxury home for a fast sale at top dollar, utilizing single property websites, building your luxury home team of vendors and service providers, preventing low appraisals, working with your spouse, team dynamics, profit margins, and more. Welcome to the call, Laura.
Thank you, Mike. Glad to be here.
Laura, it's great to have you. Laura, before we talk about what you're doing now, let's go back for a minute and talk about what you did before you got into real estate.
Well, it's hard to remember back that far, but actually, I entered the real estate business in 1979. I was, at the time, a senior in college, and my dad, who had had a very successful career in the insurance business, wanted to open a real estate company, and he had not been in school for many years, so he said, come take the classes with me, and let's do this together. And I thought, well, that sounds like fun. So I did my student teaching during the day, and at night I went to classes and in real estate at the Austin Board of Realtors and got my real estate license, and I was hooked. So even though I taught school for 5 years and actually went on to get my administrative certification so I could be a principal, I also sold real estate at the same time and really loved it. And then I met and married my fabulous husband, Brad, and he was in a related educational field. He was the executive director of the Elementary School Principals Association, so I decided to go into real estate full-time. And instead of teaching students English, which is what I had been doing, I just started teaching buyers and sellers how to buy and sell homes. So that's how I got in.
Why did you decide to go down the real estate path rather than the education path?
I just really loved working with people. I mean, in education, unfortunately, you can't choose your students. And in real estate, you can choose your students, and you should. You should absolutely choose those that you want to work with. And so I intentionally transferred my skill set. I approached everything in the real estate business like I did a teacher. I prepared in the same way. I did planning and putting together presentations. Everything was very much as I would have done it in my English class with my students. And I just loved it. I really had a passion for working with those who were so eager and so appreciative. To me, it was like putting together big puzzles. And each client represented a new puzzle. And there was just so much gratification in the whole process.
When you got started, do you think you had a fast start or a slow start?
Well, it was an interesting start because my dad never wanted to work for another real estate company. And, you know, you have to work for another real estate company when you get your license. You have to work in an office with someone who's a broker for a certain number of years before you can become a broker. Well, Dad had always run his own business, and he just didn't like the idea of going to work for another company. So he said, you know what, we're going to start our own company. We're going to call it West Austin Properties because the west side of town is the most beautiful side of town. It's got the hills, the lakes, the rivers. And what we'll do is we'll just go hire a broker. So instead of a broker hiring us, we went out and hired a broker to run the company, but we owned it. And that has always been an important and an intentional decision because we could control everything about the company, the branding, the training, where we wanted to put our focus. And like I said, my dad was a brilliant salesperson. And it worked out really, really well. We hired our own mentor.
And you're still running West Austin Properties.
Yes, I bought it from my dad in 1992 and when dad retired. And I've run the company just about every way you can run it. I've had a large number of agents and I've had a small group. And actually, I prefer a very small group of team members. More like a mentor-mentee type relationship. I find when you have a large group, it's much harder to manage. You spend a lot more time managing people and doing a lot less of the things that you really love to do. And in my case, it was buying and selling with clients. I really love the brokerage part of the business, even though I enjoyed the management, too. I think having a small team has really suited my lifestyle best.
Sure. Now, you've been doing this a while. I was trying to add up the years. How many years has it been?
34 years. I've done real estate in five different decades. I know that's kind of hard to believe. Back when I got started, we barely had an MLS. We had no computers. We had no lockboxes. And every piece of technology that came along, I just embraced with open arms and love and made it work for me. And, you know, now, wow, we have so many great tools at our disposal that are free. It's just fantastic.
It is amazing. Well, how many homes did you sell, you as an individual or with your team rather than your company, how many homes did you sell in your best year?
We sold 39 homes. Almost $19 million, and I'm going to have my best year this year. It's kind of been the perfect storm this year. Everything has just lined up beautifully. We've got real high demand, increasing prices. The lender situation is so much better than it was. We've got pent-up demand, multiple offers. It's going to be a great year.
Fantastic. Now, you've been intentionally raising your average price. What's your average price this year?
Let's see. Our average price this year so far is $794. And let me say something about average price and statistics and where you focus your business. Because you have to study the market to see where it is if you want to do the best business. And we, every year, every quarter actually, we look at the market, we look at where the market has been and where it is going so that we can focus our prospecting and our efforts in those areas and price ranges that are actually selling. So as an example of that, we've done market reports since about 2006. That 2006 and 7 were awesome years in Austin. Things were ticking. People were moving in. It feels a lot like 2006 now. We've just got tremendous influx of people and a lot of demand. And so in 2008, things started to slow down, and we could see it really before. I mean, intuitively, we knew it was happening, but because we do these market reports, we could see that things were staying on the market longer over 400,000. And by the end of 2008, there were 500 homes on the market over $1 million. And half of those were spec houses that builders had built. And so we knew that we had to change what we were doing, and we intentionally refocused our efforts and started targeting that $300,000, $400,000 price range. About that same time, if you remember, the lenders shut down all the jumbo financing. So the $1 million plus, if we had stayed focusing on that stuff and just hoping and praying that it would sell at some point, we would have been in a real pickle. And a lot of people were. A lot of big teams lost their business that were focusing in the high end. So we refocused, and our average sales price that year was $397,000. So we still did some in the $500,000, $600,000 range because there were still cash buyers in the market that drove that. But because we looked at where the business was, we were able to continue to have good years, even when other people were not having good years. And I think it's really important to look at the numbers in your market. And we break those numbers down every single month by price band. That is, we look at the number of sales in the 1 to 200,000, 2 to 300, 3 to 400, and on up. And we look at the absorption rate. How many months does it take to sell the number of listings that are currently on the market so that we know where the business is going? And right now, the high end is starting to really sell. We're seeing multiple offers in the $1 million to $3 million price range. So it was a natural this year to move our average sales price up. And that's why we're going to have our best year. We're going to do many fewer transactions, and that's by intention also, because at this point in my life, I want to have a life. I want to travel and do some things. And so the market is affording us that luxury of doing fewer transactions. I say that. I hope we're going to do fewer. It seems like right now that might not be the case. But at any rate, we could do fewer and really end up with a spectacular year.
That's fantastic. So you've got these market reports. Is there anything else you're tracking? You said you're tracking the absorption rate. You're tracking everything in these $100,000 price bands. Is it just the absorption rate? Is there anything else you track?
No, we actually do a lot of tracking, and agents can get an idea of how we put these market reports together if they want to. I have a site called marketreportbuilder.com, and there's a complete webinar there for agents if they want a little more information about how we do that. But we also track by zip code. So we track the sales by zip code, but you could track it in any way that you could search in the MLS. So, for example, if you wanted to track it by elementary schools, you could do that. Or if you wanted to track it by subdivisions, you could do that. It's any searchable field in the MLS. I chose price bands because I wanted to see the big picture. Usually people who are searching for a home in, say, the $400,000 to $500,000 price range will look at multiple areas. They may be in two different ends of our city, but because that's what they can afford, they're going to look at those neighborhoods that have those price homes in them. So we break it down by not only price band, but also by subdivision. And it's really, really helpful to give buyers and sellers the big picture. You know, when we do a CMA, we focus in on just a small area. Just homes within usually a two-mile radius, since that's what the appraisers use. But by doing the market reports, you get to see trends. You can really see when you can push that listing price up just a little bit or when you better pull it back, because you can see month over month, and we do show that. We show them in line graphs where the market has been for the last, well, ever since we've been keeping track of it, so 2006, and they can see where the market is trending very easily. And they can even see the months that typically have the highest number of sales. So not just the specifics of the month that you're in, but you can see what's happened in the past and pretty well predict what's going to happen in the future. That's really big information. And it's key when you're pricing a listing, and it's really good information. We do with our buyers a buyer consultation before we ever take a buyer out. We sit down with them and we go through, the very first thing that we go through with them is the market report to show them what our current market is doing and what they can expect during their buying experience. And we use the market report.
And it sounds like the key metric in there is this absorption rate. How does someone calculate an absorption rate? What is the formula for that?
You take the number of listings that you have and the number, and divide it by the number of sales, and that's your absorption rate. So if you have, say, 12 listings and three of them sold, then you've got 4 months of supply.
Okay. And so it's the number of listings sold in the prior 30 days or the prior month?
That's exactly right.
And then you end up with a number that's it's the number of months of inventory that you have. In your research you've done, what's the equilibrium number? Where is it kind of the changing of the tide between a buyer and a seller market? Is it 3 months or 6 months or 12 months? What's the magic number?
That's a great question. Yeah, a balanced market is 6 months. So when you have 6 months of inventory, that's considered to be a balanced market. Anything above or below that changes it to a buyer's or a seller's market.
Okay. So that's the key factor. In your research recently, where are you seeing, just in your market there, what are your absorption rates? What are you seeing?
So right now in Austin, we have a 2 month supply of homes in the entire market. We have some areas that have a week of inventory. So you can imagine what happens in that type of a market. When you have such strong demand, it becomes a seller's market, and the sellers they get multiple offers and prices tend to rise because there is heavy demand. We also see in that type of a market appraisal problems. Because the values are increasing more quickly than the statistics in the market that the appraisers use to do their comparables. So it's an interesting time when you see so much happening. And, you know, real estate is so local that you can have one zip code just on fire and another zip code that maybe have 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 months of inventory. So recently in Austin, we had in the southwest part of town, you've got a neighborhood that had 1 month of inventory 2 months ago. Now it has a week of inventory. But within 5 miles of that area, there is a little bedroom community, and it had 11 months of inventory. So it's a very local type thing, and if you're not tracking by zip code or by neighborhood, then you could miss the whole picture.
You mentioned that because of this type of market where things are starting to come back and move up quickly, appraisals are a problem because they're looking at past data. How do you overcome that challenge?
Well, if I'm the listing agent, then I've done a property-specific website just for my listing, and that is a website usually with the property address, say 123mainstreet.com. And in that property-specific website, I have put all of the data that a buyer or an appraiser would need to know to get the value. So I have all the photography, I've got the survey, I've got the subdivision deed restrictions, I've got links to the school, I've got the tax record, I've got a whole list of all the things that the seller has done to improve the property. And basically what I'm doing is I'm pre-selling this listing to the buyer by anticipating the questions that the buyer would have. This information is also key for an appraiser because they're not going to know, for example, that this house potentially has access to a boat dock where the one next door doesn't. And so if the appraiser is using comparables in the neighborhood and they miss the fact that your listing has a boat dock or access to a boat dock, and the house next door that just sold does not, there is a variable there. And, you know, we don't always, as listing agents, get to speak to the appraiser. So I do the website, and I make sure that when the appraiser is scheduling the appointment to go look at the property, that they know that there's the website with all this information in it that they're going to need. So you try to leave nothing up to the appraiser to dig on their own. Another great way to do it is I always take the lock boxes off the property of my listings before an appraiser is going to come. And that way they have to either meet the seller or they have to meet me at the property. And, you know, you don't want to be pushy. You want to be polite and helpful. And so making sure that they have that property website has been a big help, especially with things like the survey in it and all types of information that can really help them understand the value of the property. And then giving them a list of properties that you know that have sold. There's a big silent market in Austin too, and so there are sales that don't go through the MLS, and we try to have a great relationship with appraisers. Anytime they call us to ask us about a listing that we sold, we always do everything that we can to give the appraiser the information that they're looking for. And when we know of a private sale, we can also help with that information. Now, if I'm representing the buyer, I'm trying to do the same things. I'm getting a list from the seller of all the improvements that they've made in the property so that we can convey that information to the appraiser. One thing I will say, when I'm the listing agent and I have an offer come in on one of my listings, I want to interview not just the buyer's qualifications, but I want to know who the lender is, and I want to know the process for the buyer obtaining that loan. Does that lender have in-house underwriting and processing? Because I think that's really important. Does the lender have a list of approved appraisers that they use, or do they use the third-party system where they just turn in an order and the lowest bidder gets the appraisal? So all those things matter to me. I'm looking for the strength of the buyer, but I'm also looking at the strength of the lender, the loan officer, their process for getting the loan approved, and their appraisal process.
That's smart. Very good. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about your approach to the market. Your approach seems to be, and you've even mentioned it, to sell fewer homes at higher prices. How did you come about that conclusion? How did you move into that territory? Why did you decide to go that direction rather than just being an average price agent?
You know, it's funny because we can work so hard in our business, and if we are not intentional about what we are doing, then the business chooses us. So if we don't choose the area that we want to work in, we could be spending hours driving 30, 40, even an hour to service a listing. Well, that's not a good use of time. So intuitively, I knew that if we sold a $200,000 house, we were going to make X, but if we sold a $1 million house, we were going to make X. And really, there was not a lot of difference in the amount of effort it took to make that sale. In fact, the larger the sale, sometimes the easier the transaction, because you don't run into things like, you know, lender problems, and you've got more cash buyers, you've got typically well-educated people who are used to business transactions, so you don't have to teach them a lot of the processes of business, and they appreciate the level of expertise that you have. One of the things that I really focus on is having a huge, great team around me. Not team members. They are team members, but I don't employ them. But they're things like, you know, a high-end appraiser to help me with my pricing, and just all types of people, from real estate attorneys in the high end. You also see a number of clients that come from outside the country, so you need to have an immigration attorney, estate planning, having a great title company. We close in Austin through title companies, so we don't use closing attorneys. And so that title officer, the escrow officer that manages the closing, is an all-important person in that team. And just having, you know, the right IT people to get you unstuck with your computers and that sort of thing.
If I understand this correctly, you just told us you bumped up your average price to $794. And just to get perspective into your market, that's like in the top 5% of the prices in your area. Is that correct?
Yes, definitely. Especially on an average. I mean, because, you know, you have only so many high-end homes. But let me give you a little perspective about where we are right now. So we have a population in our area of 1,800,000 people. And we have fewer than 5,000 listings in our market, and we have 10,000 real estate agents trying to sell fewer than 5,000 listings to 1,800,000 people. So really it makes sense to focus on those transactions that you know are going to close. And it's intentional on my part not to do the 300 and under, because you have short sales. I don't know why they call them a short sale. There's nothing short about it. I mean, it's a long, drawn-out process. And as my great friend Alexis Boland says, you know, I choose to work with people who have money, who can buy and sell homes. So I never have one fall out. I never have a client that doesn't qualify. All of these things are intentional. Focus your efforts on those people and those areas that can bring you that business, that type of business.
I want to go back for a minute. You've been doing this business for 34 years. Have you always focused on the luxury market, or was that an evolution? And if so, why did that come about?
No. In fact, when I started in real estate, Austin didn't have a luxury market. I mean, we didn't have high-end homes. I mean, everything was pretty much on an even keel. I mean, there were small pockets of very large homes, but they were small pockets. And then the tech revolution came along, and we had more and more demand for bigger and bigger houses. And that's actually happened nationally. The demand for larger and larger square footages has been an evolution. And as those homes were built, it just made sense that you had a number of agents who trained themselves to sell in that arena. There's some really great training for agents that want to break into the luxury home market, and that is with Laurie Mormore at the Institute for Luxury Home Marketing. Laurie is a masterful teacher. She's an expert on high-end sales and wealthy individuals, and her training is absolutely fantastic. I was very fortunate. Well, I've known Laurie for many, many years, but I was fortunate enough to take that training early, and it's very good training. And so it just makes sense, because you're going to benefit more, you're going to work fewer hours, you're going to make more money if you raise your average price. But these people expect you to know your numbers. So if you're going to work and focus in that arena, you have to know your numbers backwards and forwards. And those market reports really do help. That's why we started doing them, because we wanted to track our numbers in our city, we wanted to know where things were selling and how we could intentionally move up that chain.
How long ago was it when you decided to start moving into the luxury market? You said you took the training early. How long ago are we talking?
Probably 2004. And then in about 2005, we started tracking those numbers pretty intensely. And by 2006, we were doing the market reports and really tracking everything monthly by price band and zip code. And it just made sense. And of course, that was when our market was really taking off, and it was really fun. You know, we had also a lot of great new marketing stuff. I designed a company that built websites for luxury homes, and I ended up selling that company. It was great fun. So we were teaching agents how to build websites for just one property. That was just part of the experience that level of seller wanted. They wanted you to be keen enough to build a website for their home, to design a high-end brochure, to actually tell the story of their home, because every home has a story. And it's our job as real estate agents, and especially luxury home agents, to tell that story.
When you say tell a story, what do you mean by that? Are you talking about how this home came about or the people that lived in it?
It could be either. It could be either or both. Historical homes especially, you would want to tell the story of the people. But, for example, you would want to tell about the architect, tell about the neighborhood, maybe some special features that the homeowner planned for the property. You're just going to tell the story so that, because a buyer buys lifestyle, and the home sits in a neighborhood that sits in a community, and you want to bring that home alive for the buyer so that they can actually see themselves living in that property. So whether it is the Italian party lights off the back deck, or whether it is a home that is close to or on Lake Austin, you're going to just make that property come alive for the buyer by anticipating the questions that the buyer is going to have and building that site so that it tells the story of the home.
Okay, so you've talked about this single property website. What is on that single property website? You mentioned that you have this data for the appraiser, a lot of statistics. What are you doing to attract and excite the buyer? Do you have a lot of pictures or a lot of video, or what's on the site?
Well, the great thing about it is it's a framework to hang anything. So you could put the plans, the builder plans, the floor plan, the room sizes, like I said, the HOA documents, the pool plan, the landscape plan, links to the schools. I even put a contract completely filled out in my property websites so that if a buyer comes along and they want to make an offer on the property, they can do it. Or maybe you're a brand new agent. You don't know all the ins and outs of filling out a contract. Well, it's already there for you. All you have to do is have your buyer sign it. And the great thing about that is then I get those offers back the way I want to see them, with the right dates, with the right title company, with all the right information in it. So I don't put a price and I don't put a closing date. But other than that, I pretty much have it filled out. And that really helps my sellers get the terms that they want for the sale of their home.
Have you discovered whether pictures or video are better? Is it better to have 20 pictures, or is it better to have one of those walkthrough tours? What in your experience is better?
Well, that is changing as we speak, but I think a lot of professionally shot photography is absolutely key, and the high-end seller expects a professional to come and photograph their home. Real estate agents are not photographers, and they don't do architectural photography, so it is very important that one of your team members be a professional photographer that knows how to shoot a house. And it makes all the difference in the world because they know the right lighting. My photographer even has a little handbook that we send to the seller before the photo shoot so that the seller knows how to prepare their home for that photo shoot. And these do not have to be expensive. You can find a really good professional photographer in your marketplace starting at around $100. And you can take these still photographs and make a YouTube video. All you need to do is shoot a little, maybe 15-second intro. You can do that from your iPhone or your iPad and a tripod, and then put it all into iMovie and splice in those pictures so that you've got a really nice representation of the house. YouTube is the number one search engine now, so it's going to be really important to do video. One of my goals this year was to set up a little studio where I could do webinars and training videos, et cetera. And that's where we also do our presentations like that. So yes, video is important, but good quality video. And so if you're not going to do it yourself, you're not going to walk through the house with your little handheld camera and talk about the house. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about having a professional photographer or a professional videographer come in and do that shoot for you. And yes, that should be in the property website, because that's going to make that organic material is going to make your site come up first.
In the search engines.
Mm-hmm.
You said you could either do the professional photographer, then take those photos and put them into a video, or have a video photographer. Do you make a distinction? For instance, is there a price point where you switch from the pictures to the video photographer? When do you decide to do which?
I personally like still shots in a slideshow, because I think that a buyer likes to study the pictures. And if you put it into a video, yes, they can stop and start it, but I personally like the still shot. So my preference is to do professional photography and put them into a slideshow where the buyer can click through the photography. By the way, that photography is your first showing of your listing. So if you have pictures in the internet that are not attractive, you're going to lose your buyer because that's your first showing. So it makes sense to have, you know, really good photography. I have a lot of fun with expired listings, and one of the greatest things is to see an expired listing come up in my market in an area that I really love to work in a price range that I love to work in, with crappy photography. Because that is my calling card. That's like hanging a steak out in front of me and dangling it, because I am all over that. I know that I can change the photography and maybe make some other adjustments, and I can sell that property quickly. And I just have so much fun with the whole photography thing, because in fact, I think there's a website that's been, you know, bouncing around Facebook on bad listing photos, and some of them are absolutely hysterical. And then I've got a bunch of my own terrible listing photos that I've collected over the years and had a lot of fun with them in my webinars. So anyway, photography really does matter. There's one other thing I wanted to say. You asked me about a certain price point for photography. My feeling is every seller feels like their home is special, and every seller that I work with gets professional photography. So I can control which listings I want to take, but every seller that I work with is going to get property website, and they're going to get professional photography, because I can sell a home much more quickly if I have those tools. Since it is your first showing, you want to have great photography out there, regardless of the price range. And if the seller is going to come onto your website and look to see how you market your listings, having professional photography for all your listings is important. So it doesn't matter the price of the home. Every listing should have those two components, professional photography and a property website.
Now, to make sure that those photos come out well, you're going to want that seller to prepare the home. You mentioned you send them that handbook. Have you ever needed to send them out a stager, or do you offer a professional stager to help them with that?
I always stage vacant listings, and I go through that process in our expired listing webinar. So if agents want to see a complete explanation of how we do that, they can do that at lauraduggan.com. But here's the process. Yes, I've got two people that I work with. I have an interior designer as part of my team. Remember that list of people that helps us get all the jobs done that we need to do. She knows exactly what I need, so I can tell her, I need for you to make an appointment with Mrs. Brown this week and help her get her house ready for the market. And then Casey will go in and work with her on, you know, maybe repainting a room, taking out furniture, et cetera, to get the property ready. And one of the ways that we get them to do that is we have a sheet of paper. It's a cardboard. And we've cut the center out of the middle. So it's like a picture frame. And you ask the seller to hold that picture frame up in front of their face and look at that room. And they're going to see immediately that room is stuffed full of stuff. And what the goal is to get it to look like a magazine photograph so that when you hold up that frame, you're just seeing important pieces. You're not seeing a lot of family stuff, pictures and trinkets, all kinds of extraneous stuff. So typically she'll help them remove all of those type things, and then it's not me telling them, it's a professional. Now, on our vacant homes always seem to show better if they've got furniture in them. And so we have a company in town that will provide a showing house manager. And so what that entails is you've got a person that moves into the property with all of their furniture and acts as a host or a hostess for your showings. They turn on lights, they've got music, they've got all the drapes open if the house has drapes. They've got everything in the shape to show that house that you want it to be in. Now, here's the way that works. The showing company, in our case it's Showcase Properties, Showcase Properties will hire a house manager. Really, they're tenants that have fabulous furniture. And they give them a reduced rent in exchange for living in a fabulous home and paying the expenses. So the tenant or the house manager pays the electricity, they pay the gas bill, they pay to keep the pool clean, they pay to do the yard, and they pay a small amount over that to the Showcase Properties. And in exchange for that, they act as a showing agent for this property. And it's funny, but I've never had a house for more than 60 days that had a house manager in it that was there to help me with the showings. So it's a great way to treat a vacant property.
That's wild.
Yeah, and there are companies like that all over the country. So it's a staging company, basically. We've got several of them in Austin, but it's a great way to get some help with showing your vacant listings. And it also helps the seller because they're not paying the expenses of owning the home with keeping the utilities on and all that. And for insurance purposes, the house isn't vacant, so they're not paying a higher insurance premium because their home is vacant. So it's a win for everybody.
The interior designer, do you send the interior designer into all the listings that you have?
No, I don't, because there are some homes that are ready for the market. just because the sellers have already done all that. They know they've sold multiple homes. They know how to put a property together, and I might make a few minor suggestions, but for the most part, they're ready to go. I make that determination at the listing appointment, but my designer is always ready to get in there and get things done if need be. In fact, recently we had a pretty high-profile client, and they had three kids, and both of them traveled all the time. The house was really in pretty poor condition, and so I asked the sellers to move out of the house and let us redo the house so that we could get the maximum amount of money for that listing. And we spent about $30,000 painting the interior, the exterior, refinishing the wood floors, and doing a lot of deferred maintenance that needed to be done on the property. We also changed out the carpet in the bedrooms, and this house looked fabulous. It sold right away, and they were actually able to net about $300,000 more for the property because they let us spend $30,000. And my designer picked the paint colors, picked the carpet, and supervised the work people. So I had to do nothing to get that home ready except put all the right people together, again, your team.
When you bring in your interior designer, do you pay the fee for the interior designer or does the seller?
I do. I pay the fee to the interior designer because it's part of my marketing budget. And, you know, we are so lucky now because we're not having to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on printed material like we used to and newspaper advertising and all that. So I have money in the budget to put the properties in the right condition and in showing and selling shape. So that's an important piece to getting a listing sold, I think. And it's also key for an expired listing because I can go in and I can put my finger immediately on what the problem was and then I just fix it and get it sold. And a lot of times that problem is condition. It's just not in the right condition or the photography is not right. And so I just bring my little team in. And most of the time it's only a phone call because I've got carpenters, roofers, painters, plumbers, HVAC, electricians, handy people, contractors. And I just say, I make the call. I say, I need you to go over to X house and do the exterior make ready. And so my little yard crew will get over there and they'll trim trees. They'll, you know, get all the dead wood out of the branches. They'll put compost and stuff in the flower beds and just make the house look really good on the exterior so that it's inviting to come. It's funny, but, you know, I even get a couple of listings a year where the key doesn't work in the lock. That's hard to believe, isn't it? You'd think that one of the things you do when you list a house is to make sure that people can get in it. Oh, I had a showing not too long ago, and I open the lockbox, and I take the key out, and there's a note inside the lockbox, and it says, fussy key. I went, really? I looked at my buyer, and I went, really? Fussy key? Okay, so the listing agent can't afford to get a locksmith out there so that we can get in the house. And, you know, I'm not going to sit there and fight with a lock. You know, again, that's part of getting it in its show-ready shape. So if the key is fussy, I'm going to call a locksmith and get the locksmith to come out and fix the lock and give us keys. Yeah, that might cost $50 or $60, but what is the cost to a listing agent for a fussy key?
Yeah, that buyer might walk away. Yeah. You've been going down kind of a list and kind of outlining it for us. What do you think are the major differences between working in the luxury market and working in an average price market?
You know, I think the higher the price, the easier it is to market and sell a home. Whether you're working with a buyer or you're working with a listing, the process just seems easier. You have fewer hurdles to jump. So it made sense to me to focus on that business. You've got highly intelligent people that are used to working with contracts and letting you do the job that you were hired to do. And there's a lot less teaching that goes on at that higher end than in the lower end, where you have to teach every single step. Now, that's not to say that I don't love first-time homebuyers, and I really love to sell properties of all price ranges. To me, it's not about the price of the property, it's about the people. And I'd rather look at my job as taking care of people than trying to chase a particular price range. Because every family has a number of price ranges within them. You might have mom and dad who are selling the big family house and moving down to a property that doesn't have a pool and it isn't two-story and that type thing. Or you might have their daughter Susie, who has just graduated from college, is getting married and wants to have their first home. Or you might have grandma who has been in a little patio home and it's time to pack her up and get her to assisted living. I love the people. It's just not about the property as much as looking at the business as solving problems for your clients. So whereas it's great to work in the high end, that's not the only focus. And if you try to do that, you're going to lose part of the beauty of the business, which is really helping people at different parts of their lives, because real estate happens during a life change. Something is happening in a family that is causing them to buy or sell a home. You know, it's a marriage, it's the birth of a baby, it's the death of a family member, it's a wedding, it's a funeral. I mean, there are all kinds of situations that trigger a real estate event, unless, of course, you're working in an investment property, and that's totally different, and a whole different set of skills. But you just have to be sensitive to people's situations in their lives and help them make the transition that they're trying to make. And that's where I get the satisfaction. So whereas we can put up a big number for 1 year or whatever, that's really not my main focus. My focus is how many families are we going to help get to the next stage in their lives. And that's where I get all the gratification.
If an agent wanted to move into the luxury market, how would they go about generating leads or business in that market? How would they find buyers and sellers in the luxury market?
That's a great question. Okay, well, the number one thing you need to know, if you're going to change price ranges, and that's whether you're moving up or you're moving down or wherever you're moving, or maybe you're moving, maybe you are moving to a different location altogether, you have to know your numbers. You have to know the market statistics in the area that you want to work. You have to know how many homes there are on the market. You need to know how many sold last month. You need to know how long they stay on the market, what the average number of days is, the list to sales price ratio, because all of those are questions your buyer and your seller are going to ask. And so knowing your numbers is number one. The second thing you need to know is the inventory. You need to look at the properties that you want to sell, whether you're working with buyers or you're working with sellers. They're going to want to know that you know what those homes look like, what the best features are, and so you're going to want to look at every single thing on the market. It might take you, you know, several weeks to cover an area that you really want to work in. And the third thing I would do, I would hold open houses as much as you could in those areas. So maybe you don't have a listing, but maybe someone in your company has a listing that they would let you hold open. And I would just be a fanatic with open houses. I'd write notes to the people that came through my open houses. I love open houses. So when I'm holding a house open and somebody walks through the door, I say, "Hi, how are you?" And they say, "Hi," you know, et cetera, and try to make a left or a right quickly to get away from me. And I say, "Are you a buyer or a seller?" And they look at me kind of surprised, and I laugh, and I say, because I find that a lot of times sellers who live in an area are trying to understand what the market is like in that area. And then we kind of start a conversation, and I pull out my market report, and I show them sort of what the market trends are. Whether they're a buyer or a seller, they're interested in that information. And then I ask if I could continue to send them the market report, and everybody else is trying to send them listings. I'm trying to send them the market report, and I get email addresses from about half of them. And sometimes I won't get an email address, but they'll call me back later and say, you know, we really liked the way you were representing the property, or we really think that you understand the market here, so we would like for you to help us. And so open houses are a great way. And then once you get a listing in that area, you're going to invite people to come and look at your open house so that they can choose their neighbors. I always send a custom-made listed card to each of the neighbors around my listing. I do the same thing when a property sells. So this card is very high-end. We do them in-house, and we do them on our printer in the office, and they look sort of like a watercolor rendering of the property. It's really a beautiful and eye-catching way to capture someone's interest. And we feature the property website on that card. So whether it's just listed or just sold, they see the website and how we do our marketing. And that's the way I would attack a neighborhood. Just be visible there. The more visibility you have, the more signs you have up, the better. One of the things that we do when we get a listing in an area is that we do a pre-MLS marketing. And so what that would entail would be to put up a sign in front of the house and invite all the neighbors to come and preview your listing so that they can help choose their neighbor. This is before the MLS. It's going to be 2 to 3 weeks that I want to have the sign in the yard before I put the property in the MLS, and I do that for a lot of reasons. And one of them is to create excitement about the property and to encourage multiple offers, actually. Because when a property hasn't gone in the MLS yet, there's a certain anxiety about it, and it always works to the benefit of your seller.
Huh. You'd think that putting it out to the market before you put it in the MLS would have fewer buyers, and therefore you get a lower price. But you're saying you're creating this psychological issue of not knowing exactly what's going on.
Absolutely. And so after someone has seen the property, that is the time to text them back the property website address, because I don't want them to have all the information before they see the listing. Otherwise, they won't have any opportunity, or I won't have an opportunity to interact with them. So we just put up the sign. We don't put the website address on it. We don't put a QR code on it. We want the buyer not to find the house anywhere. We want them to have to interact with us. And that is the beauty of having a listing in that area, because then people are talking about it. Well, why can't I find it, et cetera, et cetera. And it really does create sort of an excitement about it. And, you know, listings are the absolute heart of the business and always have been. There's something I call listing math that will teach you to focus on listings, because, you know, the listings are the inventory in your store. So if you have no listings, you have no inventory. And let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. We took a listing last March, a year ago, for $695, and that was a $20,850 commission. And we got a sign call from this exact type of marketing from that house who purchased a home in another neighborhood for $475, which was a $14,250 commission. And then we got another sign buyer. He bought another home for $790, which was a $23,700 commission, and they had a house to sell, So we also got a listing on that one. And that one sold for $455,000, which was a $13,650 commission. And both of their parents were moving to Austin in the coming year. So they were in the $1 million price range, and actually they haven't bought yet, but I anticipate that they will. And so that would be a $30,000 commission. And then the other one is going to buy a townhome, probably in the $400,000 to $500,000 range. That'd be a $12,000 commission. So commissions to date from that one house, that one pre-listing sign, $72,450, and we have the potential of another $42,000 coming. So that is a marketing strategy that I would definitely embrace. And it can be in any price range, and it's, like I said, what I call listing math. I mean, because when you've got signs up and you've got interest, you get buyer calls, and we just had another string that was amazing that recently happened, all in the $1 million price range. So you get a little string of those going on, you're going to have a really great year.
This is the end of part one. The interview continues on part two.